Welcome back to The Journey. Today I get to interview just an incredible, wonderful guy that I've known a long time and really just love and value, and we share our desire and our love for music. He gets to write it and make it happen, and I just listen to it. That's my role in my love for music. But Jay Rouse, it's good to have you here.
Thank you.
And thanks for taking the time to do this.
Yeah.
And
you're a musician. Don't act like you're not a musician. Trumpet, right?
Yeah.
Well, see, there you go.
I just don't play it very much.
Yeah, we need to get that out.
And if I played it, people would know why I don't play it very much.
We need to get that out. I think that could happen. We can work that into a Sunday morning somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Jay, you are widely known across the country and world, I guess, with your music abilities, your arranging. Probably not a church choir in the country that has not sung one of a song that you've arranged or maybe wrote. And I knew you vaguely a little bit, maybe back in college and through the years. But you have spent a lot of time making a lot of great music with a lot of great artists. At what point in your life did you realize music was going to be a big part of your life?
Well, my parents were both musicians in a sense. You know, they sang in church choir. They, you know, from the time I was little, I went to, you know, they drug me to church on Wednesday nights that they had choir practice. I'd be out in the lobby or wherever I would be kind of overhearing that. My mom sang in little trios and my dad kind of led singing on Sunday night, that kind of thing. So music's always been a part of my life. When I was really young, I just started, for whatever reason, I'm not sure even completely why, but I was able to kind of hear stuff and peck it out on the piano, hear stuff on the radio or commercials. My mom would say I would sit down and just start kind of figuring it out. And then I was probably six or so when my uncle, I have an uncle Jerry, who was a choral director in California for many years. Great musician, was visiting us, brought a little cardboard thing that you put on the back of the piano that's color coordinates the notes with this little book. And that was my first beginning of playing actual music, kind of seeing it in front of me and starting. And so then at about seven, I started taking lessons, and it just always made sense to me. I didn't, like many, I didn't love the lessons. That was not my favorite part by any means. But it just began to be kind of an undercurrent of my life. And so real early, I started playing offertories at church. I remember the first time I played and my foot was shaking on the pedal, and it was a Christmas time. I played like an offertory. But that was the little tiny South Lake Wales Church of God, Lake Wales, Florida, about, you know, 200 people on Christmas and Easter, maybe, so most of the time. But lots of really wonderful people that really supported me in my young days and kind of said, you can do this. And as I got into junior high and high school, I remember I was in like sixth grade the first time I actually played and a little group sang behind me. I got to accompany for the first time. Just all those little pieces started building. And by the time I was in high school, played in, you know, all the things everybody does, played in garage bands and for show choirs. And by the time I was my senior year of high school, four of the five classes I had to take were music classes that I took in my high school. So,
in high school.
Yeah, it just kind of, and I was playing at church by that time, had a minister of music at the time that was really influential, kind of gave me lots of space to grow and write and arrange even at that age for my youth group and stuff. So I don't know, it just always felt like the right thing. And for all the lack of coolness I had, the only thing I had that was slightly cool was that I could play the piano and do some, you know, had some music abilities.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone would have said you can just play the piano.
I think
at that point you're probably using other virtuoso or, you know, or whatever.
Well,
I went through all
that stuff. I did go through all those contests and stuff. I never really loved that as much. It's what you do if you're, you know, like in that age. I did it all, but for the most part, what I loved the most, even at that age, and I've said this a lot of times, I started learning in those ages things that I still use to this day when I lead worship, because you just begin to understand a room and what it feels like and how people respond to this and this and how I can make a moment more meaningful if I do this or those kind of, and you know, it feels a little bit nuts and bolts-y, but it really is a true thing. And it, to me, it's I feel like it's a gift that God's given me to kind of understand that and help music allow things to flow and be more meaningful, hopefully, to people.
Well, and then you married a wonderful musician as well.
Here's the story. I love this story. I was fine arts lobby of Anderson University. It was Anderson College at the time. I was walking through the lobby. I heard this voice around the corner singing. And I was like, "What? Who is that?" And I went around the corner and saw her face. And so it was this beautiful face and this incredible voice. And if I'm completely honest, there was a little part of me that said, you know, if there's a way that that face and that voice can be in my life for longer than, the next few days or whatever. And so, that's the first time I heard. And then the funny thing about that is I was just coming off a relationship. She was a transfer student. And so it took us a minute to kind of figure out if we were going to, how we were going to do that. Phil Fair, remember Phil Fair?
Yeah.
He had kind of brought her into the university. But we started working together. And you would say in some ways, you're a perfect couple because she sings and you play. And there's good parts about that. But it's also got its other side, too, of course, because I bring her something I've written or something. And she's like, sounds a lot like that thing you wrote 2 years ago. I was like, no, honey, you're supposed to say, that's amazing. Never heard anything like it. Anyway, but she is precious, and God had wonderful plans for us. And I finally was able to convince her dad to let me marry her. Stood in the backyard saying, but I'm a really good piano player. He's like, I'm not sure. Can you make a living? But he finally said yes. And so.
That's great.
Yeah.
Did you marry while at Anderson then?
Yeah, so Eastside Church of God, right there in Anderson. I graduated a year before her. She's younger than I am. And I was just around town and then started working for Danny Gaither back in those days. That was my job at that time. So I was on the road with Danny. She was actually on the road with Bill and Gloria at the time. I was playing piano for, it was called Spiritual Emphasis Week. I was a part of it, and Bill and Gloria were doing some speaking. Bill reached out and said, I need somebody to sing this song on Thursday night. Is there a chance you could get somebody? And I said, yeah, I think I know somebody. And so I got Amy, of course, to sing it. About 2 weeks after that night, he calls her dorm room, Carolyn, calls Ford and Bill, calls the dorm room and says, is there any chance you want to go to Huntsville on Friday night? And so this whole dream, part of my dream, had been coming to Anderson and meeting Bill and doing all that. And so my girlfriend went on the road with Bill and Gloria long before I ever had a chance to do it. But back to what you were saying, yeah, she was on the road with Bill and Gloria, and we got married right after she finished in December, the year after I finished. So, and we ended up living in Anderson until we came to Oklahoma. Never would have dreamed I'm a Florida boy, so I wanted to go back, but never. I'm still on the way, I say. I'm just stopping off in Oklahoma.
No, you're here to stay. Yeah. You're not going anywhere.
Well, we'll see. Yeah. My heart's still in Florida a little bit.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah. Along the way, you have done a lot of arranging and writing for all kinds of music publishers. You want to talk about that a little bit?
It was kind of the spring of 1988. We got married in March. Randy Vader, who was the president of Gaither Music Company at the time, went to my church. He and I worked together. He directed the orchestra, and I played for the piano for them. He came to me and said, is there any chance you'd want to be? He wanted me to be the office manager of the Gaither Music Company was the publishing arm of Bill's kind of empire. I wasn't sure, actually, Marty, at the time, that's what I wanted to do, because I wanted to be cool studio musician, travel on the road, and all this kind of stuff. This was 1988, and I started with Sandy then in 1989. So that was in my future, but I didn't know it at the time. And so I wasn't sure I even wanted to do that job. But it ended up, he came and said, would you be interested? I started in January of 1988 at Gaither Music Company as basically an office manager. Not too long into that tenure, I started just kind of doing some editing and some stuff. Randy Vader and I were in a meeting with a writer who was bringing a musical to us, and he wasn't as prepared maybe as he could have been. And so in one of the breaks, Randy slid a napkin over to me with a lyric written on it. And he said, could you write a melody to this by chance? And so I said, probably, I guess. And so we just started, I started figuring out a melody on that. And that began me actually songwriting. I never really, my dream was never to be a songwriter and all that. I mean, in a lot of ways too, my life is marked by a lot of this. I'm just a walk through a lot of open doors. I knew I wanted to be a musician. I probably wanted to write and arrange. I thought I would probably be a studio musician and be on the road. That's what I thought I wanted to do. This idea of, you know, coming to work at 8 every morning and leaving at 5, wasn't sure I wanted to do that. But then again, that opened up the door, as you're talking about, to publishing. And I did. I was worked for, we had our own company then for about 30 years, but then worked for several other companies. And I found that I had a real love for creating tools for churches to use on a Sunday morning. Yeah. You know, just that whole idea of fashioning and crafting worship and helping. I mean, so many churches we know are, the guy that leads all that has three other jobs and then rushes in on Wednesday night and grabs a piece of paper, you know, that kind of thing. So it really became a big part of my heart to create music and publishing at that time. That was a big deal. Like, that was back in the day of, if you had a church, you were trying to have an orchestra, you needed, you know, 100 voice choir, whatever, you were trying for all this stuff. So it was a really, really enjoyable handful of years there when that was such a big part.
So the words that were on the paper, you put music to the words, or did you put the words?
No, actually, it was his words. Most of the time, the work I did with Randy, he was the lyricist and I was the, I wrote the music. I definitely have been dabbled in some of that, but all of that was always, that was kind of his domain and I had my domain. And then the arranging part of it was, again, taking whatever the song it was, itself was, and then putting it in kind of some kind of format that the church could use or that a choir could use it. So, yeah, that kind of thing, and I think we all have it in our life where I didn't know that about myself. You don't see it coming. Randy and his wife, Carol, really believed in me and saw things in me that I didn't even see. And honestly, the part of me, I'm a musician, I'm creative, but I'm kind of organized too, and I like having an office. I like kind of knowing what's going to happen. I'm not that, you know, stub my toe and write a song about it guy. That's not really who I am. I'm more like, tell me where you want to get. We're trying to go from A to B. I will help you, or tell me what your musical, what your idea is, and I'll try and make it better than you thought it was going to be. That's kind of where I really can thrive. And God has graciously, you know, allowed me to do that.
Oh, my goodness. You have been in a lot of recording studios and written a lot of music. And never in my wildest dream did I think you would be in Oklahoma City. But boy, I'm, you know, we talked about it for several years, you know, trying to figure out if it could work. And finally it did. Yes. And so that's been such a it's just been so special for me that to be a part of a church of where this could happen. And that you were able to be here, and
me too.
And a lot of music. It's just been fascinating to listen to it.
Well, and this is one of the few places, Marty, actually, where you can still do it. I mean, there are still definitely some big Southern Baptist churches that still have choirs and orchestra, but I mean, and we can even talk about it, but what COVID did was already starting. Churches were changing kind of the format of how they do worship, but at the level that we're able to do choir and orchestra week after week here at Crossings is a really unique thing. And again, you know, just how gracious of God to allow Amy and I this season to be here where it's still such a big part of what we're doing here. And, you know, we had 150 something singing, you know, last Sunday and full orchestra. And it's just, I mean, it's just such a blessing for me.
It kind of takes me back to Praise Gathering in Indianapolis, the convention center. And I would watch Ron Huff conduct the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra, you know, and I wanted to be Ron Huff.
You
know? Yeah. He just was cool. I just wanted, I liked that job. And, but then I was, you know, I got to work for Bill and Gloria in the warehouse.
Yeah.
And got a little promotion.
It's on your resume, man.
warehouse. Keep in mind, that's where my music career started, in the warehouse. Yeah. And then, they gave me a shot at sales, right when the hymnal, the big famous hymns for the family of God, you know.
The hymnal that he was supposed to lose money on.
Yeah.
That whole story.
Uh-huh. Yeah, going to lose money on a hymnal you can't sell. And I don't know how much he made, but I came out to Oklahoma with a car paid for and a down payment on a house, you know.
For sure.
All earned while in college, to that hymnal, you know.
They were sitting around in a meeting saying, we need to lose a little bit of money this year. Bill, you've made too much. He said, I got a good idea. Let's publish a hymnal. Because nobody's buying hymnals anymore, and then sold millions, you know, as only Bill can do.
Oh, yeah. Both of those two people are, they've both been so instrumental in our lives, you know, mine, yours, and my brother and I, and my goodness, they've just been.
What we do on every Sunday morning would not be possible had it not been for them. I mean, Chris Tomlin, name whoever you want to name, who's influential right now, Phil Wickham, whoever. And they are riding on the backs of what Bill and Gloria began to do in the early 70s when they changed the way we look at what Sunday morning worship and what kind of corporate worship can look
like. Well, really, they, you know, when I think back into the late 70s and before that, early 70s, at one time it was two semi-trailer trucks and two buses and an airplane, I think, just to get this thing moved from one arena to the next.
Well, and
they were
all
sold out.
Yeah, for sure. And what they were doing was, there was a certain kind of feel you had. It was, for me, it was Lakeland Civic Center every January. The Bill Gaither Trio would come. The feel you, the way you felt when you went to Bill's concert was not necessarily how you felt on Sunday morning. But this generation, and I'm one of them, we started going, is there a way to make Sunday morning feel more like that?
Yes.
And because, you know, you just left and with your spirits lifted or whatever, but you also felt like, and Gloria just added such, she grounded everything. And, you know, so this was a theological experience as well as a musical experience.
Right.
Can I somehow, you know, replicate that on a Sunday morning?
And well, you do.
Yeah, it just kind of became the way we started approaching it. And, you know, we're still, you know, trying to do today. So
now you're currently the guy that writes the music or arranges music for a publisher or more?
Yeah, so there's several. Medallion Music is a company I'm involved in. I'm an editor at that for a imprint called Medallion. So we'll put out, you know, 20 or 30 new arrangements of songs, some of them original songs. A lot of what I do here at Crossings, we have a Crossings Worship Series, which is music that I do on Sunday mornings here. I put, you know, funnel that right into publishing, and it's published through Lorenz. Lilliness Publishing, Nazarene Publishing House. I still work for Lilliness quite a bit. Brentwood Benson is another company that's kind of come, left, and came back. So I'm doing some stuff for them. And then Prism Music, we here at Crossings just finished our fifth project with them, where that's basically every 2 years, that's a new book of 10 songs that we put together that we use in our worship. And then a byproduct of that is it goes out and churches all over can use the music as well. So. Yeah,
that's quite a bit of influence, you know, that God has given you that.
Well, and again, you know, I think that's that whole thing. And you talk about it all the time here. I didn't know. You didn't know. You were just, you know, you came. You didn't plan all of this stuff that we're doing. It just happens. Yeah. And God, God in his kindness allows us to kind of be, you know, in the right place. And if, you know, and the act of surrendering it on a daily basis and letting it go and saying, you know, I'm not sure, but I think, and God, will you bless this? And yeah, that's kind of,
you know, I was, it hadn't been that long ago that this, I kind of woke up to a reality that had been a part of my life for a long time. I just hadn't quite connected all the dots. But Dwight Dye, who was the pastor at Eastside when I was in college.
Me too.
And we're the, So, Dwight was the pastor of this church. He started what is now Crossings in 1959.
Really?
And then he brought along a guy that was going to be the youth pastor and help him with music named Mike Toombs.
Yeah. And who was campus pastor for me, or actually the East Side. Yeah.
By the time I got to college then, Dwight Dye was at Eastside. And
Mike Toombs
was campus or college pastor.
Yeah, he was.
I think,
that's what he was
at
when
Eastside.
I was there. Too. Yeah.
And then one of the founding pastor, not Dwight, but then the second pastor that came later, was one of my cousins. And so I always heard about this church in Oklahoma, and they'd always come, we'd always gather in June, you know, in Anderson.
Right. For sure.
And they'd come from Oklahoma and this church. And so it was really kind of being surrounded all along and not realizing it. Yeah. Because when I got that phone call, it was not in my, you know, it wasn't in my
absolutely
dream of any kind, you know. Yeah. And yet, I look back now and see how that was all planned. And even that we now, we get to do this, I get to do this with you sitting on that stage, you know, and Amy. And then there was Don and Sandy and,
yeah,
you know, my brother and my wife, you know. I remember the day that I got a Gloria yeah, sent a text. I think I may have showed it to you, but she said, I know you hated to leave the music. It was hard for you to leave the music and go to Oklahoma, but the music has made its way back to you. Made its way back to you, you know.
Absolutely.
After seeing all you on the stage. And I thought that was quite a gift.
I love that.
This has been a gift at this stage of my life that has just been
hard. Well, and that is the message, isn't it, Marty, that we, you know, that God will take care. You know, it's, yeah, again, the journey can sometimes feel kind of difficult. But the reality is, and we know, and I just turned 60, so looking back, you can start going, he had it all along. I, you know, Oklahoma wasn't on my radar either. And I, you know, but what a joy and what a gift and what a blessing this place has been and continues yeah to be.
Well, Oklahoma, you know, when I got here, it was 400,000 people in Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
Now it's 1.5 million, something yeah like that. And so in the meantime, it became a heck of a city,
yeah,
and it's been a great place to, you know, marry an Oklahoma girl and who grew there up in this go church and Kim, and then it's just been quite a gift. And then for all of us who were once in Anderson or in that circle
yeah
to end up in Oklahoma City, is only God could have put that together.
I tell people all the time, every month when we have our staff meeting, invariably somebody gets up and talks about something that I didn't even know. We're doing that? What in the, I mean, I'm just amazed by all the things that we're able to do and yeah and the reputation and kind of who Crossings is in this community and then farther the state and the United States and now because of all the streaming and the resources and stuff, you know, it just reaches the world. And it's, God has entrusted us, you, with so much. And I just think what an amazing time in history that we can be a part of all of this. Yeah. And the amazing teachers we have, and just the influence.
Sweet yeah moment.
It's wonderful.
You know, it was Phil Fair that was instrumental in getting Don and Sandy, yeah, as in Sandy Patty, to yeah Oklahoma City. And of course, Phil Fair had been the worship pastor here
back oh yeah
in the early days.
Okay.
And so he convinced Don and Sandy to relocate to Oklahoma City. And so that was just a great gift to have, you know, and then God allowed my brother and his family to move from California to Oklahoma. Yeah. You know, yeah, we never dreamed all these people would be back in one spot again in Oklahoma City. And Don and Sandy were quite a gift to our church in yeah so many ways, still are. But you spent a lot of time with Sandy.
Yeah, right. I mean,
wrote
Sandy
a lot of music.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Early in my days, you know, Amy was with Bill and Gloria, and I was lamenting the fact that I wasn't on the road at this time. But honestly, it was Sandy who reached out to me and said, Dick Tunney, who was playing for her at the time, was coming off the road. And I had played for her at different things here and there, just local in Anderson, like birthday party and different things. So, and I knew of her. She's a little older than I am, but our families knew each other, of course. And she said, it was actually the summer of 1989. She said, would you come on the road for us for this summer and finish this tour? It was it was Make Us Praise Glorious tour. Mm. We were just finishing. It was almost all fair dates. And so for like 3 months, we played outside all these dates. It was 100 degrees. I was like, do you ever do shows inside? Anyway, but then that walked me right into the next tour, which is Another Time, Another Place. And then for the following, well, for about 12 years, 15 years, I played for her always. Took a little bit of time off when my kids were born and then started back with her about, you know, 15 years ago now. So it's come full circle. And no better musician I've ever worked for. I mean, she is just top notch. And then a friend to our to our family. I mean, she's just been precious. And she and Don, you know, are some of our dearest friends. And the fact that we're leaving in 2 days to go do a handful of dates, a couple of days, and just, it's definitely work, but it's also family. And so I wouldn't be doing many of the things I'm doing not for Sandy and her influence.
Sandy thought for a while she was going to retire, you know, and yeah. I still wonder if she's ever going to retire. Let's hope she doesn't.
She keeps saying, slowing down, I'm going to slow down. I was like, okay.
Well. It seems like it just really picked up in this last year, got real busy again.
She's at the top of her game. She's doing it as well as she's ever done it.
Yeah.
There's just nobody that can change the complexion of a room like she can. Yeah.
She's got a gift.
She does.
And it comes out pretty clear. And to be doing the big Christmas thing again in Indianapolis.
Yeah. 23 dates. I bet they'll all be sold out. They always are. It's amazing.
23 concerts in 4 weeks.
Yeah, it's crazy.
She can do it, though.
Yeah. Yeah, she can do it.
And Don's right there just cheering it on.
He is always cheering us all on.
Yeah, he does. Your music clearly, I think, says that you have a deep love for Jesus. You have a deep love for his church, and that's been reflected in how you've served the church, all the churches, with music that they could get to use in worship that you had written or arranged. Where did it first kind of come into your thinking that there was God's presence out there, and his name was Jesus? Yeah. When did that all begin to unfold for you?
Yeah, again, I'm church boy. Born and raised. I mean, every time the door was open, all that stuff. So it was a part of my foundation, always has been. I think like every kid, you know, you have to kind of eventually figure out what does this look like for me. And it was really intertwined with music for me, of course, because it's all that goes together. But I was probably in my middle 30s when had some really challenging things I kind of ran up against. And I kind of learned that I had more of a relationship with church than I did a relationship with God.
Yeah, I was there.
And I didn't know that, but, you know, when I did something well and those saints told me, you're great, and all that, I mean, that was kind of my, God loves me. And because of some situations I found myself in, that wasn't as real at that point in my life. And so I started thinking, what is this really about? And that's when I began to go on this quest for how can this be more? I also grew up in the era of here's what you do and here's what you don't do.
Yeah.
And I had a little bit of, ooh, but I've done a few of these and I kind of like that one. I mean, you can cut that if you need to. But I'm just saying, it was like, what is this list thing about? Because everything in Scripture tells me that the heart of Christ, the heart of Jesus that I know and love, loves me.
Yeah.
He's not standing with a list. And I knew I believed that in my heart of hearts, but I wasn't sure the church I grew up in believed that. And so that began this journey for me to figure out, what is this? What gives this hands and feet? What is it going to look like for me to be not just a musician, not just a church musician, but a man after God's own heart? And so, you know, Celebrate Recovery at that point in my life became a really important part of my life. We were at the Bridge in Anderson at that time. Loved that, led and worked in Celebrate Recovery for about 5 years. Preceded that with Precept Ministries. Remember that whole inductive Bible study? That was really influential in my life. Mm-hmm. And I just began to realize, I can have a relationship with Jesus that is really personal. It's not like I'm only walking through the door of the church. And that's become then the foundation of my music, as opposed to, in some ways, it was a little bit the opposite in the beginning. The music kind of walked me into a lot of things. But anytime I can on a Sunday morning help, you know, lead a group of people from where they are, the stuff they're carrying, the challenges of their story, into a place that feels lighter and feels more grounded in Christ, that's what I want to do. That's what makes the most sense to me.
And you're doing it quite well.
You know, people ask me a lot, you know, what's your best memory? And I mean, Carnegie Hall, I've done a lot of really fun things, mostly because of Sandy. She took us, we've been around the world. So I've done a lot of really cool things like that. And that is true. But still, and it's going to sound a little bit self-serving, but my favorite stage to play on right now is Crossing Stage. And part of that is a brown nose, but part of it's not. So, I mean, but because here's the truth. I mean, everything from, like, just the technology of it, and we have incredible people here. I can do what I need to do. And then it's just the place that my head can be the cleanest, and I can just be here for the music and let it just be about that. Those are the amazing, that's my favorite place to play right now. And, you know, I think for as long as I can commandeer that piano bench, I plan to. So.
That's good. You've got it commandeered until you die, basically.
For a little bit. We'll see.
You also, though, have a new title of recent called Grandfather.
Yes, I do.
How's that working for you?
If you insist, I have pictures here. I could start that. It's amazing. And my son and daughter-in-law and baby Saint, Thatcher, Ingrid and Saint, who have lived in Orlando since they've been married, have made a move here to Edmond and bought a house about 3 weeks ago. And so we are all here now. My daughter, London, Amy and I, of course, and then Thatcher, Ingrid and Saint. So yeah, the whole grandfather thing is the best. I don't think I loved my children as much as I love this tiny human.
Yeah,
he's just precious. And Amy's, you know, built for this.
Yeah,
it's her thing. So.
I've always said there's a switch inside you didn't know you had, and all of a sudden it gets flipped on, and you become an idiot.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. That's for sure. Yeah, he's precious, and we feel so blessed that we're all kind of here together. I don't know how long it'll last, but for at least a handful of years. We're all here together in Oklahoma, of all places.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, it is kind of. It definitely is.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Well, thanks for your time and for letting the story get told. I've been eager for the church to hear this story. And I can't, you know how thrilled I am that you're here. And it was a big dream for a number of years that could that possibly happen.
Yeah.
And then it did. And to have you and Amy and now the whole family. And your parents are just delightful, wonderful people. Yeah. And I know my dad thought they were so special to my dad.
Your dad was a huge influence on my parents' life.
And, you know, that was going on before we even knew, I'd ever heard of the, you know, the Rowles family. I didn't really connect all those dots until later. But anyway, I think God has been very kind to Crossings to bring you to us and Amy.
And you guys have been so kind to us.
And we're having a good time.
Yeah, we certainly are. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Yeah.